Sabrina, and I'm an alcoholic. And I have a sobriety date. It's November 17th, 2009. I have a home group. This is my home group. And I have a sponsor who I call and use. And I have the privilege of sponsoring other women in this program. And I would say thank you to Blair for asking me, but I'm at this point in time, I'm still really nervous, so I'm not grateful yet that he asked me, but hopefully that'll change. I grew up in San Diego, California. You know, I had two very, very loving parents. They took me to church. They're, you know, Catholic. I went to Catholic school. I, you know, was taught manners. I went to charm school. You know, everything on the outside, you know, looked really, really great. Like, there was nothing that, you know, you would think from looking on the outside in that you would, you know, think that would be attributed to my alcoholism, if that was the you know, basis that alcoholism was drawn off of. But I do have a lot of alcoholism in my family. My grandmother, my mom's mom, died of this disease when my mom was 16, so I never met her. My real father is an alcoholic and a drug addict still, and my stepfather also drank a lot when I was growing up, and he's in and out of AA a lot of the times. You know, I was talking to my dad the other day, and we were talking about my son Max and his first words, and he says, you know, uh-oh, and mama, and dada, and my dad told me that, you know, I said mama and dada and booze. That was like my third word that I said. I'm like, wow, that makes a lot of sense, because I guess, like, I would always try and take my dad's, like, cup, and it was alcohol, and he calls it booze, so he would always say, no, you can't have that, it's booze, and so I started saying booze when I was really little. It all makes sense now. You know, like I said, my parents, you know, they showed me and they taught me, you know, how to live and how to be a good person. And, you know, somewhere along the way, I started, you know, hanging out with kids and making decisions, you know, based on self. I've always, you know, even since my earliest memory, like, I've always just been very full of fear and very full of myself. Like, I either think that I'm, like, amazing or I think that I suck. Like, never, like, you know, in the middle, like, never am I just, like, a person among people. Like, I'm either, like, the, you know, it, or I'm, like, the worst. And, you know, somewhere along the way, I don't know when exactly that happened, but, you know, I lived my life like that. I never just, you know, felt like, you know, a part of, kind of like Madison was saying, like, I always wanted to be something else or someone else or somewhere else. You know, I was never just, like, happy and content with me and what I was. And, you know, I had this fear that went around with me, you know, everywhere I went. I was just always scared. I mean, I remember, like, even, like, at nighttime, like, going to bed and, like, having to sleep with the light on because I was just always, like, so scared. And I would, like, look behind me, like, walking and stuff. Like, I was just always, you know, really, really full of fear. I did pretty well in school. I was always a talker, and I was always, like, there for, like, the social aspect of school. You know, I always got in a lot of trouble, and I always got my name on the board, and, you know, I was never, like, the A student. I was just kind of, like, mediocre. I kind of, like, just did enough just to get by, and that kind of carried on with me into high school. My mom started noticing that I was wanting to hang out with my friends and just socialize and just kind of, you know, party more than I wanted to, like, study or do anything. So she kept me really busy. I did ballet and I ice skated and I did, like, Irish dancing, even though I'm not even Irish. Just, like, you know, like, just really random stuff. I played the piano and, you know, my mom had me in all these activities, which I believe kept me out of trouble a lot longer than I would have been had I not been doing that stuff, because, you know, because I felt so weird and I felt so funny and I was, like, so full of me and my fear and everything. Like, as soon as I did find alcohol, like, there was no way I was going to part with it, because, like, it made me feel, it was the only thing at that point in time up to you know, my life. And I had my first drink when I was 15, and I was talking with Melanie about Earl H. earlier, and he talks about, I held off as long as I possibly could. I had my first drink when I was 8. And if I could have had my first drink when I was 8, I would have, because that's how I felt at 15 years old, you know, when I found it. I was in high school, and I remember my very first drink. It was homecoming my freshman year. And, you know, I spent all day with my girlfriends getting our nails done and getting all dressed up. We went to, like, Nordstrom and got our makeup done at MAC, and it was just, like, this big production. We had a limo, and I just remember our limo driver buying us alcohol. And I hadn't really, you know, I've had experience with alcohol, like, because of my family. Like I said, my family all drank. My grandfather was a highball drinker, for any of you. Oh, this group's too young. But anyways, it's like whiskey and 7-Up. It's like what old people drink. And I used to tend bar for him and, you know, make him his highball. So that really, I didn't know anything about alcohol except for beer and VO and Crown Royal. That's what he drank. And so I just told him, well, get me something that's fruity and that's not going to taste like alcohol, because I hate the taste of beer and I just want it to taste good. So he gets me Zima, you know, of course. And I drank it like it was Sprite, because it tasted like Sprite. And so, you know, I think there was like four in a little pack, you know, like four Zimas later, and I'm probably on my next, you know, pack. Like, I don't really remember anything, and I don't really know anything that's going on, except for we had somehow left the dance, and I was at the beach. Our high school was like a block away from the beach, which for me, you know, wanting to drink and smoke pot every day turns out to be a total disaster, but that's later. Anyway, so that night I'm, you know, in the sand, I'm running in the ocean, in my gown and with my hair, and I blacked out, and I was a complete disaster and a mess the very first time that I ever drank. And this was to follow me, you know, throughout the whole entire, you know, drinking career. I blacked out, I spun, I threw up everywhere, you know, I made out with everyone's boyfriend who I was friends with in the limo. I mean, it was a disaster, you know, it was a complete disaster. I was alcoholic from the very, very first moment that I drank. And, you know, I continued to drink this way for, I would say, the next, you know, 2 or 3 years of high school until it actually caught up with me, because back when I was in high school, which was a really long time ago, they had off-campus lunch, and so we could walk to, like, the beach and the taco shop, and I just would never go back to school. We would get a 22, and we would, you know, do other stuff and hang out at the beach, and it eventually caught up with me, and they had truancy officers, and the truancy officer, you know, got after me one day when I was supposed to be in class, and I was at, like, Los Dos Pedros getting rolled tacos because I was, you know, drunk, and so I got in trouble, and my mom immediately pulled me out of school and put me into home studying. So now I'm in home study, and she's, like, making me ice skate, you know, 5 more hours a day instead of, you know, being in school, and I'm just freaking out because I'm not, you know, hanging out with the kids and I'm not having my friends. And so my drinking kind of took, like, a back seat at that moment. And then I finally, I think for my senior year, you know, after a year of begging and pleading with her, like, I have to have a graduation, I have to have a prom, I have to have a grad night, and I have to, you know, experience all these things that normal kids are supposed to experience. So my mom, you know, she let me go back to school. And at that point, like, she wanted me to go to an all-girls Catholic school, which was not, you know, going to happen. So I had to take this entrance exam, and I made, like, designs on the, like, the Scantron. And somehow, you know, my mom talked to one of my friend's moms, and they ended up getting me in there anyways. And I remember, like, right away, I'm like, I will kill myself if you, you know, send me to this school. You know, right away, I'm, like, just very dramatic. I go right to, you know, just crazy, like, my life is over, the world is over, everything is just so, you know, dramatic and huge. And so she lets me go to the local public school, which is called Point Loma. And so I went there, and you know, I had a lot of friends already from church, because I went to CCD since I was not in Catholic school anymore. Of course, I had to finish with all my sacraments. So a lot of kids from my CCD class went to school. So I went there, and I already had a lot of friends. And luckily for me, they were, like, all the popular kids. So I kind of just, like, and the partiers, too. So I kind of just, like, right away, you know, knew where to go, knew who to hang out with. And you know, and I was off to the races. I barely graduated. I took a year off of high school after after graduation and between college, and I went and I ice skated in a show in Asia, and it was with a lot of Russian people, and they love to drink, so we got along great. They drink vodka, and that was new for me, but I loved it, and I was gone for like, you know, maybe like the whole year or something, and then I came back and I went to college. And, you know, again, I'm there for the social scene. I'm there to talk to my friends and see where everyone's going at nighttime. I'm not really there to study or to learn. You know, I'm passing notes in class and, you know, just doing all this crazy stuff that I really shouldn't have been doing. And eventually, you know, I drop out and, you know, my grades suck. So I'm, like, not in school anymore. And I'm telling my parents that I am. And, you know, just a lot of lies. Like, I was always very, very dishonest and selfish, and I didn't, you know, I really couldn't care less that, you know, you're spending all your money for me, you know, to go to school and to buy me these retarded books that I'm never even going to open. But I'm hanging out with my friends, and I'm talking to everyone, and, you know, we're going in the VW, you know, bus in the yard, you know, before school. And, you know, I didn't care that I was, you know, taking advantage and, you know, just hurting my parents and, you know, using their funds. So they, you know, stopped paying for me to go to school eventually. And then I went to community college, and that was just even worse because, I mean, it was like high school all over again for me. I mean, everybody I went to high school with was there. I mean, the ones who partied, obviously, who didn't go on to a university. you know, my kind of people. And so I hit it off there, and I'm just, you know, I can't even, I'm so hungover, I can't even make it to my classes the next day. So needless to say, school and college and all that did not really work out for me very well for many years. At this point, I'm getting ready to turn 21, though, and, you know, what's going to happen here at this point in time after I turn 21 is going to lead me down a path that is, you know, inevitably going to change my life, you know, forever. And I was really, 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 really drunk and really, 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 really messed up on a lot of stuff. I was a huge, you know, club kid back in those days, and I loved to go to all the after-hours clubs, and I loved to do all the, you know, little party favors that they had in those clubs. And, you know, this night I had done all of them and some, and I was up at, you know, until 6:30 in the morning, and I know a lot of you are familiar with that, and it's like people are, you know, the real world is starting to come out, and like the birds are chirping, and the sun's coming up, and it's just ugly, you know, it's just, I'm still awake, and, you know, I've got like half makeup on here, and like hair over here, you know, and I'm just like, you know, I'm just like, you know, I mean, honestly, you know, so I need something to kind of like even it out at that point in time. So I had this, you know, I had this brilliant idea. Let's go at 6:30. Let's go open the bar. My uncle owns a bar in South Mission Beach, which is a very, you know, popular little beach town in San Diego. And I had just turned 21, so he was going to be, you know, so super excited to see me. So at this point, I get there, and I think it was like 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and my uncle makes like a really, really good Bloody Mary. So like my grandpa goes there. Well, he did because he's now since passed away. But my grandpa would go there, and like my aunt and my uncle and, you know, members of my family, and they would go and they would have their, you know, their drink because they had just woken up. And, you know, that's what they did on a Sunday and on football Sunday. And, you know, I come rolling in there, you know, nightered with all my friends, and my uncle was super excited, so he kept making me all these shots. And I blacked out, which I, you know, normally do. I do that a lot. And I actually had fallen off the bar stool at this point in time. And there was, like, terracotta tile, so I fell and I hit my head. I had urinated myself at this, you know, my grandfather's there, like, you know, members of my family. Like, I'm just a really, like, classy woman, let me tell you. And, you know, I urinated myself. My friends had to carry me to my uncle's house, and I wake up, like, on my uncle's couch, and my mom is just, like, you know, this look that my mom would get that I would continue to see, like, over and over and over, and it would just break my heart. But not enough for me to want to change, you know, like at that time, like it just wasn't enough, like that look just wasn't enough yet, like I knew that I was hurting her, and I knew that that was not the look that I wanted to get, but, You know, something inside of me just did not care. And, you know, that is my alcoholism and that is my selfishness, that I am out for me only, you know, and I only care about what I want and what I want to do to get what I want that's going to, you know, make me feel better and to make me happy. And, you know, that's how I lived my life. And so after that point in time, I had to go to the hospital, and at the hospital they give you lots of fun medicine. And so I started, you know, in true alcoholic form, they gave me two, and I really only needed one, so I started stuffing them in the mattress of the hospital bed, because I can take these home with me, I don't need them right now, I mean, one's working fine, why not save them, right? So I'm like pocketing pills while I'm in the hospital with a concussion. Brilliant. And so my uncle, who is a physician here in Tampa, actually, he has a brother in Chicago who is a neurosurgeon, and he had him look at all these, you know, films of my head, and they said I had some spot somewhere, you know, on my brain. It was like some, I don't even know, like a crazy long, like, medical term, and right away I'm like, oh, my God, that episode of MTV where the girl took too much ecstasy and she had all those holes on her brain, that's what it is. Like, it has to be. Like, that's exactly what it is. So, you know, like, right away I'm freaked out. Is that enough? Still not enough. You know, it still wasn't enough, because at this point, you know, I'm in the hospital and I found something that, you know, alcohol really did it for me, but these other little pills, I mean, they really, really did it for me. And, you know, so I went on this big, long love affair, you know, with this other substance, and I will just call it, you know, Budweiser, and and I started going to treatment centers, and I started going to rehab, and I'm not here to advocate, you know, for rehabs, but I am going to let you know that, like, AA is amazing, and it absolutely has saved my life, and I truly believe that the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous can help save anyone if worked exactly how it's outlined in our big book. But I was such a mess. Like, I could not function in society. I could not go an hour without shaking and having to pawn something, steal something, you know, anything to get what I needed. I mean, it had gotten that bad. And, you know, so I finally got sent to rehab, because I needed to be, like, removed from society. Like, I needed to be, like, locked away, so I couldn't, you know, hurt anyone anymore. I couldn't, you know, rob from them. My mom would buy new clothes, and I would, like, take them to Nordstrom and get the money so I could get what I needed. Like, I just would take everything. Like, I would have taken the TV, but back in those days, I mean, they were big, and I couldn't carry it, so... But, I mean, I took everything. I took everything from everyone. And, you know, I destroyed everybody's life that came in contact with me. And so I started going to rehab. And the first time I went to rehab, it did a really wonderful thing for me. And it taught me about a place called Mexico, which was, like, you know, half an hour away from where I lived. And instead of needing a prescription for my Budweiser from a doctor, I could just buy it there. So I would drive by myself, you know, knowing very well that, you know, this is just not a really great idea and this is not a safe place to go by myself. I had a lot of friends from Mexico in my high school, and their parents would, like, set them up with, like, nice cars and nice apartments, and they would come to our schools because it's really dangerous down there. And I just, you know, like I said, I didn't care. I would go to any lengths to do and to get what I needed to get. And how much time do I have? Okay. So, you know, I started doing this, and I started driving down there every single day, and, you know, I stopped going to church with my parents, and I stopped, I had stopped going to church with my parents a long time ago. You know, I stopped praying, you know, because my dad used to, like, leave the Daily Word. It's like this little, like, Catholic book. He, like, would leave it in my room, and I would read it sometimes, even though, you know, I'm out partying and stuff. But I would still pray, and I would still, you know, try and talk to God, because I was Catholic, and I grew up Catholic, and I went to Catholic school, and I, you know, I had some sort of conception of God. And at this point, you know, my prayers consisted only of, please help me to make it across the border and to make it back, and that was it. And, you know, I got myself into a lot of trouble down there, you know, quite a few times. And the first time I accidentally had hit a pedestrian, like walking, because like nobody drives. I mean, a lot more people walk there than they drive, and so like when the light turns, like just people flood the street, and I just was not paying attention, and I hit a pedestrian, and I got taken to Mexican jail, and it was awful, you know. It was just so bad. And, you know, I definitely believe that this is a family disease and that denial runs so deep, because for so long, like, I was doing these things. Like, I was stealing and I was going to Mexican jail and I was doing all this stuff. And, like, my parents really just, you know, like, until I sat them down and was like, look, this is what's going on. Like, my mom sent me to a health spa in Palm Springs because she said I had a chemical imbalance that needed to be flushed out of me. Clearly. So, you know, I'm going to Tijuana and I'm getting in trouble and I'm doing all this stuff because, you know, I need to get what I need to get, and that's where I can get it now. And, you know, one day I had gone like to detox, to my detox doctor, and I asked for some detox meds, and I went home and I took the detox meds, and I was getting ready to go to treatment again. This was probably, at this time, I had probably been to maybe like 5 rehabs already, and you know, I had managed maybe to put together like a couple weeks at this point in time ever, you know. And I was a runner. Like, I would get into treatment and I would be like, oh, I've got all these new clothes in my suitcase, I'm leaving, and I'd go to Nordstrom and I'd return them, and I'd, you know, go do what I needed to do. And this day, the people in Mexico thought that I should stay for a while and not go back to the United States. So, you know, it's not funny, but, like, I still, even after all these years, this was probably, like, 5 or 6 years ago, I do have, like, I have nightmares, and, like, I get, like, night terrors, and I, like, scream in the middle of the night and stuff, and it's a lot better than it used to be. But basically, like, you know, they kept me. And my family had to hire somebody like who specializes in finding like missing people, like to get me. And I was gone for like 3 weeks or something. And you know, at that point in time, like, they had found my car, and they had found my wallet, and they had found like everything in my car, but just not me. Oh, my cell phone, like everything was like there, and it had been recovered except for me. And so my parents are, you know, freaking out. My mom thinks I'm dead, and she's got this like search party coming out and looking for me. And, you know, they start like putting my poster like everywhere in Tijuana. And I remember, you know, getting out one day and like going through the town, and like somebody like coming up and like whispering, because my dad owns a construction company and he has a lot of Mexicans who work for him. And you know, they had gone down there with my parents to like help them find me. So anyways, to make a really long story short, like, they found me, and, you know, I said the most honest prayer of my life that day, and I asked God, you know, I said, God, if you're really there, like, send somebody, you know, because I just want to go home. And they came and they got me, and they took me like to the border. And I just remember like getting home and like seeing my mom, and like my mom is like really like the nicest, like sweetest lady. And you know, like, I was killing her. Like, she was really pretty, and I was like killing her, you know. At that time she was like, I don't know, like 50. And she looked like she was like 70. She was like, you know, shaking and like all shriveled up. And so anyways, they're like, well, you're getting out of here, you're leaving, and you're going to this place in New Jersey called Alina Lodge, and it's a long-term treatment center. And so I love to talk to people in, like, halfway houses and treatment centers, because, like, I have no sympathy for you. I was there for 15 and a half months. Like, no phones, like, no cigarettes, no caffeine, no candy, nothing. Like, we got a newspaper, the New York Daily News and the New York Times on the weekend. And we got to watch, like, an hour of TV a week. And the only literature we could have was a big book and a 12 and 12. And, you know, I absolutely needed every single second of it, because I was, you know, I was so broken, and I was so, like, just gone, that everything that had ever been taught to me in my life, like, was just, like, sucked out of me. Like, I was just, like, you know, a skin and bones, and that was it. And, you know, they broke us down, and they built us back up, and, you know, the place is called... The boot camp for alcoholics and for those who are reluctant to recover. And, you know, that's what I was. You know, I was very reluctant to recover. And, you know, and my life got really, really good after that. I, you know, got out of there and I went to Bel Air, Maryland, which is like right outside of Baltimore. And I was in a recovery house from there. And I had to walk to my very first AA job, which was at Ross Dress for Less through the snow. So, again, you know, no sympathy, like at 4 o'clock in the morning to scan tags. Like for hours, and I was so grateful. And I would walk through that snow, go into that job to make six something an hour, saying like willing to go to any lengths, because, you know, at that point in time, like I was just so grateful to be alive, and something, you know, something had finally clicked, and these people helped me to see that, you know, I was a selfish taker, and all I did was take from people and hurt them. And they helped me to see that, you know, that's not who God wants me to be, and that if I don't, you know, follow these 12 steps that's outlined in this book, that I will continue to live that way and I will die. And, you know, unfortunately, life got really, really good, and I kind of like, you know, drifted away because I knew too much, and, you know, I didn't need meetings anymore, and I started working at Father Martin's Ashley. And, I was convincing myself that that was my, you know, 12-step work. Big mistake. You know, because I'm talking to drunks all day. I'm at work and I'm talking to drunks, and I quit that job to take a job in a restaurant. And so I'm working in a restaurant, and, you know, I'm not really going to meetings anymore, and I'm in this crazy relationship, and I decide to go to my cousin's wedding unattended. You know, I mean, unattended, like I'm the only, you know, sober, and I'm barely sober at this point in time. And I go there, and I made a decision to pick up a drink, you know, after having some time in this program. And, you know, I do believe that I had made that decision already, you know, way before that night. But I really, you know, the guy came and he asked red or white, and I was like, huh. And I thought about it, and he must have thought I was really weird because I took entirely way too long to answer such a simple question as red or white. And, I don't even know what I said, but I blacked out again that very first night, just like I always do, and I was off to the races again. And, you know, at this time when I had relapsed, you know, I was back within, like, a couple weeks, you know, doing exactly what I had been doing before. And, you know, I do believe that, you know, wherever you go, you take you. But I definitely believe that, like, I am one of those people that, like, just needs to be kind of, like, removed, you know, because I was in Baltimore City this time. Like, okay, it's not Tijuana, but it's just as bad, and it's in the United States. So, I mean, I was basically getting myself into, you know, the same amount of trouble, just in a different city. And, you know, my sponsor who had been my sponsor in Maryland, she, you know, she had this glow about her, and she just had this, like, peace and this happiness, and she would, you know, run around, and we would, you know, fill up her car, and we would drive miles to go, you know, hours, sometimes 5 hours, just to go, you know, share. We would be, like, in Virginia and New Jersey and Delaware and, you know, just all over the place, and I knew that she would be able to help me. And I called her, and I called her every day, and, you know, she told me just to come to Florida, and that she was going to take me through the 12 steps, and she was going to put my hand in God's hand, and she wasn't going to, you know, listen to me cry and whine and tell her my sob story about how, you know, I'm the victim and blah, 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 blah. You know, she was just going to give it to me straight up, and that's what she did. You know, she didn't pat me on my butt. You know, she kicked my butt. And, you know, that's what I needed. I needed somebody, just like I did when I was at the lodge, to be honest with me. And, you know, I started sponsoring girls, and everybody does it different, but this is just what worked for me. You know, I started sponsoring girls. I was like 2 months sober. I had already been through the steps, and I was already sponsoring girls. And, you know, I got really involved in service, and, you know, my life got really good again. But this time, you know, because my life got really good and it changed drastically, oh, and this is the other thing, I'm a huge believer, and please be careful what you pray for, because I was praying every day to make me more responsible, and then I got pregnant. True story. Nothing is going to help you to be more responsible than having a child, you know, like, I definitely, like, oh my God, he is, like, the best gift from God, but, like, I really, really needed it because I'm, like, super, super selfish, so now I don't, like, think about me all the time, I just think about Max, and it's helped me, like, a lot to be more responsible, and, you know, so, like I was saying, I because life got really good, I still have to keep AA first, always, no matter what. I still sponsor girls. I still have a service commitment. I don't get to go to as many meetings as I would like to because I do have, you know, a child. And he's a child of God, and he needs my help, too, just like, you know, all you guys do. Like, we all need to help each other here. But, you know, my sponsor tells me that, you know, Max is one of God's kids and that, you know, God gave me him because he needs me. So, you know, AA is, you know, first in my life, and so is my son. I'm getting married in like 2.5 weeks, which is like totally crazy because I never really thought that I would get married, much less be like marriage material or like mommy material. Like, I mean, it's just nuts. Like, it's really nuts, but I'm just very like, you know, nervous. And I had a really, really bad day yesterday, like a really bad day. And then Blair called me and he was like at the beach and it was like windy, and I was going to pretend that I couldn't hear him, but I could hear. So I was like, okay, yeah, fine, I'll do it. But, you know, I need to do this kind of stuff. And, you know, I need to be here in this home group. This home group has absolutely saved my butt. Like, when I first got here, like, Lindsay, Kitty, like, a bunch of you girls, Monica, a bunch of you girls, like, all just, like, you know, were so nice to me and, like, reached out to me and, like, made me feel, you know, there was a little of, you know, anyways, I won't go there. But a lot of you girls really, really made me feel like welcome and home. And this is my home now. And this is my home. And I'm here every single Thursday. The only time I wasn't here was when I was in the hospital. So, you know where to find me on a Thursday night. And thank you so much for letting me share.